Good afternoon. You are tuned to KTOO, and this is Juno Afternoon for Friday, July 19th. My name is Martha Moore. Coming up next, in the next hour, we'll learn about Discovery Southeast Bilingual Backyard Naturalist Program. LaTroy Burris from Catholic Community Services will be here to highlight a new mentoring program for at-risk youth. We'll get the details about Juno Explorers Week at the City Museum, and we'll get a preview of this week's Food Truck Friday. All that, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more. Thanks for joining us. The forecast for the rest of the day is periods of light rain, and for Saturday, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 61.
This is National Native News. I'm Sarah Gustavus, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. The All-Indian Pueblo Council in New Mexico announced this week that the nonprofit section of the organization will be dismantled. From KUNM in Albuquerque, Carrie Young reports that despite rumors of a complete dissolution, the advocacy group's governing body will remain intact.
The 400-year-old council represents 19 pueblos in New Mexico and one in South Texas, serving as a political voice for the area's Pueblo people. Rumors of the council's disbanding began Wednesday night after a Facebook post on the group's page announced that the organization had been dissolved by current leadership. The post and the page have since been removed. Council members were tight-lipped about the move yesterday but stated in a press release that the organization is restructuring and will return to the original focus as a cultural organization. As part of the new structure, the Pueblo governors elected Philip A. Perez of the Nambe Pueblo and Myron Armijo of the Santa Ana Pueblo to act as co-chairs to provide ongoing leadership for the group. The press release states that the reorganization will not affect any of the council's business operations, including the Santa Fe Indian School and the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center. For National Native News, I'm Carrie Young.
Runners from 8 Ojibwe communities from Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota participated in the 2013 Healing Circle Walk and Run this week. The event was sponsored by the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, known as GLIFWIC. Healing runs are an ancient tradition among Anishinaabe or Ojibwe people. Dan Huckleck from WGZS reports on how this run takes on modern issues.
The Healing Circle continues to be a prayer for healing, first at the individual level, through the family, the community, then the nation, and ultimately, Aki, or the earth itself. GLIFWIC member tribes began the run in the 1980s as a run for peace and solidarity, when harsh words and even violence greeted many native spearfishers at boat landings as they exercised treaty rights. Neil Kimisik, Biological Services Director with GLIFWIC, has been involved in the run since the beginning. He says that over the years, the event's scope has broadened to include a focus on improving physical and mental well-being.
We need to heal ourselves first before we can help heal our families. And once our families get healthy, then, you know, maybe we can do something to help our communities. And once our communities are healthy, maybe our nation can be healthy. And we can always do things to help our mother, the earth, to be healthy.
Despite humid weather conditions and temperatures hovering around 90 degrees, dozens of runners of all ages walked or ran various stages of the 7-day, 550-mile healing circle. Chally Topping Thompson is a teacher educator with the Fond du Lac Band, and she's participating in her first run this year.
Part of the reason that I'm doing this healing run is to make running the new normal, not just running, but living a healthy lifestyle, the new normal.
The Healing Circle Run concludes today at the Lacouture Reservation in Wisconsin. For National Native News, I'm Dan Hucklack.
Reporter J.P. Rehnquist also contributed to that report. Two Indian Health Service, or IHS, hospitals have been certified as baby-friendly facilities, Claremore Indian Hospital in Oklahoma and Phoenix Indian Medical Center in Arizona received the designation. This certification from Baby Friendly USA is offered to hospitals that provide resources and information to promote breastfeeding among new mothers. The Baby Friendly Hospital Initiative is supported by the World Health Organization and the United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund. The program promotes breastfeeding as one part of reducing rates of childhood obesity and diabetes. Five IHS hospitals have received the Baby Friendly designation. IHS is currently running a campaign to get all obstetric facilities certified by 2014. During this week in 1972, the Alaska Native Village Corporation for King Island was officially incorporated. It's located in the Bering Straits region. This is National Native News. I'm Sarah Gustavus.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Kawanic Broadcast Corporation is seeking to fill two positions in our national studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We are accepting applications for a senior producer for Native America Calling and resource development specialist to sell underwriting. Full job descriptions can be found at nativeamericacalling.com. Click on employment.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And you are tuned to KTOO. This is Juno Afternoon. My name is Martha Moore, and I am here with Beth Weigel and Summer Custer and Christine Amor. And they're here to talk about Discovery Southeast and about the Bilingual Backyard Naturalist Program. So I think I'll start with you, Beth, and just tell us a little bit about Discovery Southeast and what its mission is.
Right. Well, Discovery Southeast, our mission is to connect people to nature, and we do a lot of that through our programs. We're well known for our nature studies program we do in the schools in the third, fourth, and fifth grades throughout the year. And then in the summer, we run a program, a day camp called Outdoor Explorers for 9 weeks. So we are really enthusiastic about having kids connect with nature, and we had the opportunity to kind of mix in a little something different and try something new this year. And so in talking with Summer, we decided to try and mix in a little Spanish. We're really lucky each year we get interns, and we have some from Austria, Germany this year. So it just seems like a nice fit to bring in a little bit of language and things like that to what we're doing outside and prepare kids and older adults to head off to other places that they want to go and connect with nature and other areas of the world. And Spanish is a great language to have when you're traveling. So that's what we're testing out here. We had our first trial run today. Actually, it was a real run, I guess. It wasn't even a trial. And we had a great time on the beach out at Ocrec and learned many of the things that you'd find on the beach today and Spanish words for those.
That sounds like a great idea, taking Spanish out of the classroom and getting it out in the real world.
Yeah, and one of the things I learned from Summer today is that, you know, when you're pairing language with movement and action and singing and something else besides just talking, it really sticks a little bit better. So
Summer, can you tell us a little bit more about some of the other sessions that are coming up?
Sure. Well, today's theme was about the beach and objects you'd find on the beach. And next week, we will be doing a walk through the woods. So we'll be learning about animals and plants and trees and things like that you'd find in the woods, in the forest. And we will also have a class about animals that you would find on the beach as well.
Are you the Spanish-speaking person?
Sí, señorita.
Where did you learn your Spanish?
Well, it's been a long history. When I was in high school, I did a foreign exchange in Argentina after taking 2 years of Spanish at the high school here in Juneau, Alaska, which is where I'm from. And then through college, I traveled and lived in various Spanish-speaking countries. When I graduated from college, I lived in Costa Rica, and I built a business there. And then I lived for 10 years in California, where the majority of my friends were Spanish speakers.
Oh,
and she taught Spanish when she lived in California, too.
That's great. Kind of describe what these sessions are like. Are you actually conversing with children in Spanish, or are you just kind of naming things?
It's a little bit of both. I'll definitely speak to them in Spanish, and I'll translate myself into English. And it's also a lot of Spanglish, so they can understand me. I will present the words in context in Spanish, and then we'll focus on some key words, usually no more than 10 words they'll learn at a time, and they're words that will be really practical for them. That, like, we learned how to say rock and seaweed and shell and ocean and beach and those concrete objects today. So they were able to, every time we would play an activity or do something, they would practice those words. And
so what are the ages of the children who are coming to these?
Well, today we sort of, like we had a little trial run, and we had some kids as young as 4 and as old as 10. I think the ideal age for our programs and sort of everybody keeping at the same pace is between 6 and 9. I think that works really well. And in our Outdoor Explorers camp, that's how we sort of divide things up, 6 to 9 and 10 to 12. So we can manage some mixed ages, but I think our activities and our games and the kinds of things that we're doing outside, as well as the, you know, being able to sort of engage with the language works best with that age group, 6 to 9.
So they don't need to know any Spanish. These are true beginners in
the
language.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. And so is Christine, what can you tell us about this program?
Well, I have the dates for the other programs that Summer's going to be leading out at. We're going to be, this is kind of a second run-through of celebrating the backyards that we have in our schools and all these really great areas. So we're going to do July 24th, which is next Wednesday, Forest Plants in the backyard of Riverbend Elementary School. And then we'll do that following Friday, July 26th, Intertidal Ecology at the Auk Bay area.
Auk Rec again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And then July 31st, the next Wednesday, we'll be doing forest animals back at Riverbend Elementary School, and that backyard is really nice.
And what's the times?
It's 9 to 12:30 each day, right?
Right, and we ask parents to pack their kids a lunch and some extra clothes in their backpack and water, of course, and we have a registration process for these programs. They can visit our website at www.discoverysoutheast.org or give us a call at 463-1500 to learn a little bit more information about how to register. And since it's a half day, we encourage parents to send the lunch along so that they can sort of snack and have their lunch as they're out in the backyard. And it's a really great, fun time, and we don't, unfortunately, aren't able to provide transportation to the locations, but that's why we've put it at a central school location, and it's a great backyard there anyway. So, and then out at Auk Rec is a great facility to be on the beach. And
so can parents sign up for just an individual?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Day? They want to just try coming for one session, that's great. Obviously, language learning happens through repetition and practice, so we encourage you, if you want to give this a try, give it a try for all the sessions.
And is there a cost to this?
There's a $20 charge for our members and $25 for non-members,
so
for each
really
session.
So it's just minimal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cost.
Yeah, it's like I said, in a bit of the infancy stage, and we had a great time on the beach today. We had about 12 kids or so that were there today, and
wow.
So we can probably take up to about 15 kids, I would say, would be about our maximum at this point.
So this is something somebody should sign on to register for or sign up for?
Yeah, give us a call and we can sign you up. And we get a little bit of information from folks when they sign up. We like to have a little medical history of the child in case there's something that happens while they're out there. And we have a risk and release form, of course, and just some phone numbers and things like that. So.
Sounds like a wonderful program.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add to?
I don't know. Do you know how to say rock or stick in Spanish?
I should. I've taken so many years. I learn it every 20 years and forget it every 20 years.
I think one of my favorite things that Summer did today actually was really fun. And it was an interesting cultural sort of insight as well, I think, is the word for stick.
Palo,
right? And she said it's a very common song that people learn and sing, kids sing all the time in different Spanish-speaking countries, that's about a pretty stick. And I don't know, are you willing to sing it?
Ay, ay, ay.
Ay, ay, ay.
Palo, 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 palo bonito, palo, palo bonito, palo,
Nice.
So it was pretty fun to have the kids with their pretty sticks and singing about them. It was fun. It was a great time.
I think that's a great way to have them remember things.
Mm-hmm.
I think the things that I remember most have been like advertisement jingles. And
right, and totally. On the car on the way home, we all had that song in our head,
yeah.
For better or for worse.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Well, yeah. Good. Go ahead and tell us the website again.
It's Discovery Southeast, all one word, all spelled out, .org. DiscoverySoutheast.org is our website. Our phone number is 463-1500. And you give us a call or send us an email at info@discoverysoutheast.org as well.
Okay, so a wonderful thing to do with your kids this summer. And again, the dates are July 24th, July 26th, and July 31st. So that's like Wednesday, Friday, Wednesday, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And maybe you'll do more of this as the years go on?
I think we might talk a little bit about how that might fit into more of an after-school program maybe or something. Yeah.
And expand the languages?
Perhaps, yeah. We'll need to have some other language speakers come forward and want to do different languages. Summer's our Spanish specialist.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks so much for the three of you coming in, and good luck with this program, and it sounds like a lot of fun.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Gracias.
Todas partes voy.
and thanks for staying tuned to KTOO. This is Juno Afternoon, and my name is Martha Moore, and I'm here in the studio with Donnie Burris and Latroy Burris. And Latroy is with Catholic Community Services, and he's come in to talk about a new program for at-risk youth. Hi, Latroy.
Hi, John.
Hi, Donnie.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Okay, this new program, and I'm looking at the flyer you just handed me. It's called the READY program, and what a great name. What's READY stand for?
READY stands for Realistic, Educated, and Dedicated Youth. That's my goal at the end of the program, for them to be ready, ready to take on anything, any obstacle that they might face throughout the rest of their life with the help of some great, great mentors.
And who's sponsoring this program? Is this?
This is, we received a grant through OJJ, Office of Juvenile Justice. It is a big grant through Catholic Charities USA. So we're just the sub-grantees of the grant.
Okay, a good use of money from juvenile justice, which
yes.
I'm sure will reap benefits in the long run.
Yes, it will.
Who, tell us about the mentors, or who can be a mentor, or who should be a mentor?
Well, mentors, you know, should be people that, first of all, love helping people, love working with young people. I was fortunate enough to have a mentor when I was young, and I think I turned out okay for the most part. And he just should have compassion, you know, should be able to care and deal with young kids, because it's very it's a tough population to deal with, but with some nice qualified mentors, I think the job can be done very professionally.
And how old are the kids?
The kids will be from 9 to 17. The mentees will be 9 to 17, and the mentors, you have to be 18 and older. You will be screened, drug screened. We have a background check. The whole nine, because when you're dealing with other people's children, you want to make sure that everybody's doing the right thing.
And you need to commit for a certain period of time?
Yes. We would like for you to commit for 1 year. The grant says 2 years, but we're going to go with 1 year. Because 2 years is a long time, mm-hmm. especially for anybody living in Juneau. You know, we don't know where we're coming or going, so
yeah.
We want to go with 1 year. And they're going to be dealing with kids that are at risk, you know, maybe at risk for delinquency, their grades. The better you can do in school, the more productive you'll be in helping out the society. So we want to have mentors help guide kids to do that.
So we've got Donnie Burris here in the studio, and Donnie, you're going to be a mentor?
Yes, I'm really excited about this program. I have a joke. I have a love for at-risk youth, for all youth, especially at-risk. It's just a special part of my heart, and probably for years I've been kind of trying to convince my husband to let me foster care some teenagers. I don't know if it's going to happen, but this is the next best thing. I get to mentor teens, spend time with them. We have to meet with them at least once a week. And I'm looking forward to this. I'm so excited that I have this chance to build a one-on-one relationship with a special teen. I think it's a great idea. I'm really excited about this program.
Are you looking for more mentors?
We need six mentors and six kids. So that's what the grant calls for. So we're going to call for, you know what, I think I'm going to call for seven, just in case someone, maybe eight. So let's just keep going.
It's the more the merrier.
The more the merrier.
Give us a safety net.
You know, the more kids we can point in the right direction, I think the better for us as a whole.
And how are the kids being identified for this?
They're going to, at risk meaning delinquent. We're going to check with their school. We're hoping to get up with the Department of Juvenile Justice. Those would be great, great candidates to have to be mentees. Kids that, you know, might just need an extra push, you know, in the right direction. Those are the kids that we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. So you will find the kids?
Yes. I'm going to, hopefully, some probation officers or some principals or some parents that, you know, can think that their kid might be a good candidate for this is listening to the afternoon show and will start to call me. You know, my flyers are up around town. I will be putting up more next week. And so just, you know, give me a call. Information's on the bottom. leave a message, or you can email me with all the information, and I'll definitely get back. It's a long process for the mentors, because we want to make sure the mentors are the right people for the job. The mentees, the kids, you know, we're gonna get those. But the mentors right now is what I'm trying to get.
So is this patterned after a program in another part of the country that's working well?
It's basically, it's just like Big Brothers, Big Sisters.
Yeah.
Big Brothers, Big Sisters is under CCUSA, which is Catholic Charities USA, in other parts of the country. It's based on exactly the same thing. They call them bigs and littles. We call them mentors and mentees. You know, but I think we're both trying to get kids pointed in the right direction, just a little bit.
And what kind of benefits are you going to hope to see for these kids?
Graduation, going on to college, maybe it's VOTEC, but just being productive, not being on, not wanting, needing any assistance, going off and doing bigger and better things with their life. Like I said earlier, I was a product of having a mentor. We are from New Orleans. And it's pretty tough growing up there. And I didn't have a father. And my mentor pretty much taught me how to play basketball. He taught me how to swim, taught me how to drive. I mean, he wasn't getting paid for none of this stuff. So he just did this. And, you know, now I have an opportunity to go out and search for mentors and maybe even tell them my story of how a mentor helped me. And I wrecked the mentor's car. He didn't get mad at me or anything like that. He's just like, okay, well, you know, I won't tell my wife. You know, you don't say that, I won't say nothing. Okay, fine with me, dude. Let's go. So it just helped me out. And till this day, I still write him on Facebook and say Happy Father's Day because you helped me out so much.
He sounds like a really special person.
Yeah.
So this is all volunteer.
All volunteer.
Okay.
We would pay for them to go out to certain, like, the movies or the turf field, or they want to go ice skating up to Eagle Crest. Catholic Community Service will pay for those type of events.
Okay.
I mean, because you have to meet once a week. So whatever kind of event, we want the mentees to kind of choose, and we want them to partner up and say, hey, let's go here, let's do that. So if you're a mentor and you have a specific thing that you would like to offer, that you're really good at, boxing, reading, poetry, music, stuff like that, that the kids would be interested in like that. So, you know, everyone's welcome.
So is there a kind of a matching exercise?
That would be very intensive.
Yeah.
You know, could it fail? Yes, it could fail.
Yeah.
But we're going to try to get the best match possible for each kid and each adult as well, because we don't want the adults to be uncomfortable either.
Mm-hmm.
The training, it will be a lot of training, and managing aggressive behavior, just to see how to work with kids that might be a problem, but then again, it might not be.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like a really good thing to be doing, and I really applaud you for that. How can people find out more about this?
Well, you can contact me. My name is LaTroy Burris. My cell phone number is 907-723-7106. Or you can come down to the Zach Gordon Youth Center, and my office is through the orange doors through the weight room. Or you just ask for me at the front desk, and I'll come by, and, you know, we'll talk about it and sit down and see if you want to become a mentor.
And there's a website or a...
There's my email on there. It is troy.burras@ccsjuno.org. You can email me. My inbox, you know, is unlimited. So email me and I'll get back with you like that.
Okay. Thanks so much. This is through the Catholic Community Service, and on the flyer it says Strengthening Families and Individuals in Southeast Alaska with Dignity, Care, and Compassion. And this is called the Ready Program.
Yes.
Yeah, let's get ready
let's
to help
ready.
Some youth. Very exciting.
All right. Thanks so much, Donnie and LaTroy, for coming in, and good luck with this program.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
Tonight on 360 North and 360North.org, at 8 o'clock, UAS in Cuba, a semester-long search for Che, Hemingway, El Papa, and the Authentic Tourist, is this week's Evening at Egan program. Then at 10, it's Great Decisions in Foreign Policy. Platts Energy Week is at 10:30. This Week in Defense News is at 11, and BioCentury This Week can be seen at 11:30. It's a great way to look at public affairs tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, July 19th, 2013. The Seneca Falls Convention, the first convention for women's rights, began on this date in 1848. It was organized by Elizabeth Cady Stanton and her friend Lucretia Mott. They had been getting together frequently to talk about the abuses they suffered as women, and they finally decided to have a public meeting to discuss the status of women in society. Stanton used the Declaration of Independence as her model and drafted what she called a declaration of sentiments calling for religious, economical, and political equality for women. And Elizabeth Cady Stanton read the declaration and then made a radical suggestion that the document should also demand a woman's right to vote. At that time, no women were allowed to vote anywhere on the planet. Even many of the other women there objected to the idea, thinking it was useless to ask for something impossible. Reaction to the convention in the press and the pulpit was mostly negative. A Philadelphia newspaper declared, "A woman is nobody. A wife is everything. The ladies of Philadelphia are resolved to maintain their rights as wives, belles, virgins, and mothers." It would be 72 years later, in 1920, before women would be granted the right to vote. Only one of the signers of the original Declaration of Sentiments was living at the time. It's the birthday of firearms manufacturer Samuel Colt, born in Hartford, Connecticut, 1814. When he was 21, he perfected a working version of a revolver with a multi-shot barrel, which he patented. He also designed a rifle and formed a company to manufacture both of the firearms. Colt produced most of the pistols used during the Civil War, and the company's six-shot, single-action Peacemaker model, introduced in 1873, became the most famous sidearm of the West. It's the birthday of French Impressionist artist Edgar Degas, born in Paris, 1834. After he became completely blind in one eye and nearly so in the other, he began to work in sculpture, which he called a blind man's art. Degas remained a bachelor his entire life, saying, "There is love and there is work, and we only have one heart." And here's a poem by Edna St. Vincent Millay titled "Dirge Without Music." I am not resigned to the shutting away of loving hearts in the hard ground. So it is, and so it will be, for so it has been, time out of mind. Into the darkness they go, the wise and the lovely, crowned with lilies and with laurel they go, but I am not resigned. Lovers and thinkers, into the earth with you, be one with the dull, the indiscriminate dust. A fragment of what you felt, of what you knew, a formula, a phrase remains, but the best is lost. The answer is quick and keen, the honest look, the laughter, the love, they are gone to feed the roses. Elegant and curled is the blossom, fragrant is the blossom, I know, but I do not approve. More precious was the light in your eyes than all the roses in the world. Down, down, down into the darkness of the grave, gently they go, the beautiful, the tender, the kind. Quietly they go, the intelligent, the witty, the brave. I know, but I do not approve, and I am not resigned. Dirge Without Music, a poem by Edna St. Vincent Millay from her collected poems published by Harper Perennial and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. This is Billy Collins for the Writer's Almanac, hoping you'll join us next time.
And once again, you are tuned to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. My name is Martha Moore. Jane Lindsay is in the studio with me, and she is here to talk about another great opportunity for kids in this town. There seems to be so many. Hi, Jane.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Welcome.
Thank you.
Tell us about Juno Explorers Week.
Sure. Every year, twice a year, the museum puts on what we call a Juno History Explorers Camp for kids ages 8 through 11. And we generally do it during spring break, and then we also do it in August before school starts. And this year's program is around the theme of thousands of years of history. Margie Hamburger, our curator of public programs, put it together, and I think it's going to be quite fun.
Great. Who's doing this?
So actually we have many people that are coming for the 5 days. It's August 12th through the 16th, 12:30 to 4:30, and every day is a different day. So we start out on Monday. We call it the original people, and we'll be going to the Alaska State Museum and looking at their exhibits on Tlingit armor and weaving. We'll look at the fish trap at the City Museum, and we'll talk with storyteller Ishmael Hope and just explore the original people who lived here. On Tuesday, we call it Gold Fever, and Bev and Jerry Harmon, who are just wonderful community sponsors of mining and mining history in this town, are going to be taking the children gold panning. So they'll get to experience what gold fever was like when prospectors came here and started the city of Juno, the town of Juno. And then on Wednesday, we call it Old Juno, and we're going to be just walking around the neighborhood, downtown Juno. We'll be meeting with Mark Whitman, hearing some stories about Juno. We're also going to be meeting with our neighbors in the Filipino community, entering the Filipino Hall. You know, who lives here, and who started this town? And then Thursday, it's a bit of a throwback, but we're going to the glacier, because before anyone was here, the glacier was here. And we're going to be meeting with geologist Kathy Connors and walking the Trail of Time and exploring our ice field, only from the trail, of course. And then on Friday, which I think is great, Margie brings it all back home to History Today. So the participants live in Juno or from Juno. What's it like to be from Juno? They're going to be making books of their experiences, their lives, and also the camp thus far. So the great thing is if you sign up for the entire week, it's $180, but you can also sign up for individual days. We'd love it if you came the whole week, but you can also sign up for individual days. Yeah.
So this is August 12th through 16th, and what time of day is it?
Sure, it's 12:30 to 4:30, and the program begins and ends at the Juno Douglas City Museum, which is on 4th and Main Street.
Okay. And what does the cost include?
Sure, it's all fees for getting around in buses, a light snack, and materials are included in the cost.
Okay, great. So you probably want people to register beforehand?
Yes. Actually, you need to register in advance, and also to hold your child's spot, you need to prepay. And there are limits for the class sizes, so we really encourage parents to go ahead and go to our website, take a look at the each day, see what they're interested in, give us a call if they have any questions, and go ahead and register.
Through the website?
They can, yes, you can download the registration form on the website, and you can actually fax it to us, or you can drop by the museum and pick up a registration form. You can call in with a credit card or whatever you prefer.
Great. Nice program. So anything else going on at the City Museum you want to talk about?
Sure. Well, we're in our summer hours, so we're open 7 days a week. And Main Street is still pretty blocked off, but you can definitely get to us. You can park in the Transportation Center, or you can park around the governor's mansion or whatever, don't let the construction turn you off from coming up to the museum. And we're open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Mm-hmm. And our exhibits, we have new works by Dan Fruits, and we actually have Jeff Brown, Masterpieces of Merriment, that are up. It's his postcards, which are a lot of fun for all of us. And then our regular exhibits is a hands-on history mining room, a hydroelectric hands-on panel, an interactive stamp mill, some fun things for everybody, fish trap, digital stories on Juno and Capital City history. And then, of course, we have our 26-minute-long video, Juno, City Built on Gold. And then this fall, we'll be, October, we will be extending, actually, Dan Fruits. We'll have him up through October. But Toby Harbinuck is going to be exhibiting with us November and December. And he does some really interesting work. His theme is 21st Century Life in Southeast Alaska. And he does high dynamic range photography. He stitches aerial panoramas together. He does nighttime aerial photography and stereographic photography. And he's looking at the glacier. He's looking at the Tongass Forest and just life in Southeast Alaska. And it's pretty compelling images, so I think it's going to be a really incredible exhibit. We've got our theme for the 12x12 this year. That's going to be in February, and the theme is black and white, and it's our 10th year, so we're pretty excited by that. It's a great community invitational. And then another exhibit that we're pretty excited about, it'll be in March and April, is M.K. McNaughton, and she's going to be doing large charcoal portraits, and her theme of Juno people, and her theme is secrets. So she's going to be giving her subjects she's going to offer them a sentence or two for the label to either keep or tell a secret. So she's exploring with publicizing personal life. So we read that proposal, and of course her artwork is very fascinating, and we just thought, this is really interesting. So we're all pretty excited about that.
We have so many creative people in this town.
We do.
So tell me again the hours of the museum.
Sure. We're open 7 days a week, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And, of course, you can buy an annual pass for $20, or you can become a friend of the Juno Douglas City Museum, and that offers whatever level you're at will offer benefits, and many of the benefits offer an annual pass.
And it's open all year round?
We're open all year round, yes.
Do you cut back hours?
We do. In October, we generally go to what we call winter hours, which is Tuesday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming in, Jane. It's great to hear about this Explorer Explorers Week.
Yeah, lots going on.
Yeah. And the other things that are going on at the museum.
Thank you for having us.
So good luck with those projects.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Of a rabbit falling through a hole in the ground. A magical, mystical world was there where the Queen and Mad Hatter were found. I grew so tall and shrunk so small with Alice as my faithful guide. The Cheshire Cat, he made me laugh so hard that I almost cried.
You are tuned to KTOO. This is Juno Afternoon. My name is Martha Moore, and I have been joined into the studio with me by three people, and I'm going to have them introduce themselves because I'm maxed out on names today. So, Sharon.
Okay, I'm Sharon Gateman, and I'm King Island Christmas is performing tonight, so that's why I'm here.
Hi, I'm Clint Sullivan, and my wife Jessica and I started a company called Sweet Sullivan Specialty Cakes, which we are selling cupcakes at the Jack tonight.
And I'm Sandy Fortier, and I'm representing Impassioned Music Studio, and we're performing tonight at 5:30.
Oh, great. So the event is called Food Truck Friday, and can someone tell me what Food Truck Friday involves?
Sandy, do you want to do it?
Oh, give it a shot. Well, there's a lot of stuff that that goes into this. So there's food at food trucks, and Clint will be part of the food vendors. And then there are some jewelry and goods.
Well, the mosquito market
and
is
mosquito
out in
market.
The parking lot instead of the flea market where Alaska.
And I think it starts at 4:30, and then there's entertainment that goes from 5:30 to 7:00. And probably inside on the main stage, and so music. So food, goods, mosquito market, music, you name it, it's there, culture.
It's kind of like the old Marine Park Friday night concerts on steroids. You know, it's like more than a concert, more than a market, and it's a great place to grab a bite for supper, too.
Yep.
So my question is there still a concert in the park?
This is it.
Yeah. Okay.
Because you know what? There's not really good seating there anymore. And then there was the situation where the weather might force people to come into the Jack. And finally, Nancy and company said, why not just hold it at the Jack? And it's been really fun this summer.
Yeah. And I think there used to be Saturday or Sunday markets with the local vendors. And so they just mashed those together.
So it will have be like a farmer's market. Will people be selling?
Oh yeah, Martha, you need to come over there and check it out.
And the mosquito market, people just show up and sell things out of their trunk, so you can find goods from that people just pluck from their home.
Treasures, right? And today we can also find cupcakes.
Yes.
Oh.
Right, Clint.
Yes. Very good ones that my wife has made.
I think that's your cue,
Clint. Yeah, I haven't been talking very much.
What can you tell us? I mean, can you give us some build-up for the cupcakes?
For the cupcakes? Yeah. Well, my wife, Jessica, is extremely talented, and so we started this business a couple months ago, and we have three today. And the one thing that I think is kind of neat that we have tonight is we went and earlier this week picked a bunch of fresh salmon berries and made one of our cakes with a vanilla pound cake, and it's filled with a hand-picked salmon berry jam, and it's topped with a salmon berry buttercream and then a salmon berry on top.
And chocked with vitamin C, I bet.
And then we have a blackberry lemon swirl and then a chocolate blueberry cupcake as well. So those are the three that we are offering tonight.
Wow. And what other foods are available? What other vendors?
It varies each week. I've seen some ice cream and burgers.
And barbecue and fried bread. And there were hot dogs being grilled one week and beverages. I mean, you actually can get enough to eat at Food Truck Friday. All the food trucks just kind of come in, and then some people are just selling baked goods. It's really a fun event. And I can't wait to hear your kidlets, Sandy.
I know. This is the first time that some of my students have performed ever. And some of them are pretty new to playing piano or singing. And they're so brave. And some of them are so cute. They're very young. And they're so great.
Can you tell us about the music that's going on?
Yeah. So there are three acts. And Sharon's one of them. And then I'm one of them. And there's another one.
It's Ed Schoenfeld and the oil
and barrel.
Yeah, yeah. It's so good.
Yeah, okay. So we'll go first. So I have about 10 students, and they take lessons with me, piano, voice, flute, and I have a clarinet student, too. And it's, since it's summer, we picked some fun songs, and the singers are doing some pop songs that you'll know, and I am playing my flute. I'm going to play duets with some of the my flute students, and my clarinet student is playing a trio with me and another of my flute students. So it's just it's a mixed bag.
I like that.
This is going to go on every Friday.
It has been all summer.
Different performers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a variety of artists, crafts.
Yeah,
food,
everything and great everything. Music. I mean, Ed's the most amazing performer. And people who have heard him at the Folk Festival know he writes great political satire as well as doing just kind of fun songs. He and whoever is singing with him tonight, they'll be great performers and people will love it. And then, of course, I would be remiss were I not to put in a plug for King Island Christmas. We're opening next weekend, Thursday, Friday, and two shows on Saturday at the Jack. We'll be back next week to talk about that. But we're going to give people a sample of three of the songs from this, Alaskan holiday favorite. People will get to hear Over the Mountain, On the Mountaintop, and one of my all-time favorites, Agoutik, Muktuk, Salmon, and Seal. So about 20 people will be singing tonight, and it should be great.
And they're still raising money to go to Scotland.
Absolutely. Right? We have under 20,000 to go, but it's been a full court press really since we opened the show in December. And we're calling it now the Gene Rogers Memorial Tour because it was based on the book mm-hmm. that she wrote after Ree came back and told her the story. Deborah Vort wrote the libretto. David Friedman wrote the music. And it really is more than ready for prime time. It's ready to be performed at the Edinburgh Fringe. Oh, Martha,
absolutely.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've watched it so many times. Oh.
Yeah. If you haven't seen it, you need to come out tonight and next weekend. And
thank
see
you.
It all four times. 3.5 times.
Yeah, we even have a pay-as-you-can, and next week you'll hear we have a sing-along. A King Island sing-along. So, Martha, that's the one you should come to.
I can bring my student.
So.
Yeah.
They can practice their voice.
There you go.
So, you have a sponsor for Food Truck Friday. I want to give you an opportunity to holler in the America line.
Oh.
Okay, never mind.
Well, no. I mean, they were always a big sponsor of Concerts in the Park. And, you know, we just kind of walked in here, but yeah, absolutely.
We're the talent.
We are so grateful to Holland America Cruise Line because they've been, I remember years ago when this first started, they have been there almost since day one, mm-hmm. you know, being supportive. And just in general, they're so supportive of the community and the arts. They're one of the first go-tos.
Yeah.
Whenever we're putting on something. So, yes, thank you, Holland America Line.
Good
what
day.
Else, Martha?
So let's, let me just get the particulars straight on this. It's tonight. It starts at?
People are over there already. If you look out that window, you'll see.
It officially starts at 4:30. You can go shop around and
the
probably
Jack
eat.
Is there anyone out there who's, like, just
new to town?
New to town.
Well, it's at the corner of Egan and Whittier. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of parking because it's pretty much connected to Centennial Hall.
Right, and there's no one left in the parking lot by 4:30, 4:45.
Mm-hmm. And it's
on a
free.
Friday?
Yes.
Yep.
And it's totally family.
Free,
oh, yeah.
And family-oriented and fun.
Oriented.
And food.
And
don't
are you
the
looking
food.
For more vendors, or can any more vendors be?
I think people should call 586-2787 or go to jahc.org. And that's a great way to sign up. Is that how you did it, Clint?
Yeah, I just went on the website. It's really, really easy, and it only costs $5. So I'd encourage people, if you have something you're interested in just trying out, just put in $5 and just see how it goes.
Especially for the mosquito market, anybody can sell whatever they have at home, and that information is probably on the website, too.
Yeah,
it's a great website. It also tells you everything that's happening.
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay, so Food Truck Friday, and there's going to be music, there's going to be food, lots of people, lots of your friends, lots of fun, and artists.
And Martha. Music, merriment, and Martha will be looking for you.
Yeah, I guess I gotta come now.
The food and craft start at 4:30, and the music goes from 5:30 to 7.
Right. So first it's going to be your students.
Right, yeah.
And then at Schoenfeld, and then we'll back clean up with King Island with Deb Smith and Missouri Smythe.
Are all these
Kimberly
things
Andrews
sprawled around outside?
No, the performances are inside. Okay. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should be in on the stage.
Yeah, they're inside on the stage. You're outside, right?
And then, well, I'm inside actually as well.
Okay.
Everything except, at least last week, everything except two food vendors, and then there was homemade rhubarb ice cream that was outside. Everything else was inside, all the crafts, everything else was inside.
Okay, great. Well, thanks so much for coming in, and it sounds like a good time, and I'll hope to see you all there tonight.
Yay!
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Martha.
This is Bird Note. Listen as a bobolink sings a rapid jangle of notes, like a meadowlark backed by a banjo. This bobolink is singing in central Maine, just north of Bangor, at Sunkhaze Meadows National Wildlife Refuge. Sunkhaze Refuge, the name comes from the Abenaki tribal language, protects one of the largest peatlands in the region. Peatlands, or peat bogs, are wetlands containing great masses of ancient waterlogged plants, much of it sphagnum moss, that moisture and high acidity keep from decomposing. Peatlands have great conservation value, as Sunkhaze Meadows illustrates. The refuge's multiple habitats are rich with bird life. Peat bogs, streamside meadows, shrub thickets, cedar swamps, maple forests, and more than 20 kinds of warblers nest here. There's one now. Yellow-bellied flycatchers return to these bogs each year, all the way from Panama. And that singing bobolink? Well, he covers an even greater distance to return to Maine, migrating north to the meadows of Sunkhaze from as far off as Bolivia. It's gotta be good to fly all that way. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation.
And that's it for today's Juno Afternoon. Thanks for joining me. Please join us Monday at 3. Joan Partis will be hosting. We'll find out about this week's weekend's performances of King Island Christmas. Lori Yorba will give us a preview of Monday night's Kia dance class. And that, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and More, Monday at 3 on Juno Afternoon. Tonight, rain likely and areas of drizzle, patchy fog late, lows around 53. Saturday, cloudy, patchy fog in the morning, chance of light rain and areas of drizzle, highs around 61. You're listening to KTOO.
That Trayvon Martin could have been me 35 years ago.
Some unusually personal remarks from President Obama about the Trayvon Martin shooting and reaction to the verdict.
It's Friday, July 19th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Alyssa Block.
And I'm Audie Cornish. The president spoke about the pain in the African-American community and the common experiences of black men in a society that fears them.
We'll discuss the president's remarks and more with E.J. Dion and David Brooks.
Also, more layoffs in Chicago schools.
In Brazil, outrage over politicians who use military planes and private helicopters to fly to soccer games and weddings, all on the public dime.
People are protesting over public transportation, and then you discover the authorities are taking joyrides with public money.
And the case of the really seedy motel, a vacation horror story.
That's coming up. No news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear.
California fire officials are announcing an evacuation warning for another 700 homes on the western flank of what has been a rapidly growing wildfire in the San Jacinto Mountains. Officials say the blaze has now grown to